On this episode of the New York, New York Baseball Podcast, Wally, we talk to Brett Gardner and the great Tom Verducci, get their thoughts on what has been an interesting start to the Yankees and Mets season.
Right, Verducci, an encyclopedia of baseball, and Brett Gardner now the oldest Yankee position player in point of service, if you can believe that.
Unbelievable. You're going to want to hear from Verducci, for, like you said, he's an encyclopedia of baseball, but he has a very interesting prediction for Giancarlo Stanton.
Yes, he does. You're going to want to hear this, and Babe Ruth is going to want to hear about it as well.
In addition to that, we'll talk about the Mets and Matt Harvey being moved to the bullpen. Is he going to remain there? What's going to be the latest with Harvey?
Yeah, like what does he do to reclaim his career? Is he back to being, he thinks he's a starting pitcher, but maybe he's really a reliever.
The Yankees call up Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar is on fire, and Derek Jeter continues to get dragged in the media. The New York Baseball Podcast coming up next. All right, we are back. Another edition of New York, New York. Dan Canobio, Wally Matthews. And Wally, I was thinking about this last night. This has absolutely nothing to do with what's happened this week between the Yankees and Mets.
Okay.
How many people can say they covered Alex Rodriguez and Mike Tyson?
A couple. Yeah, I'm one of them. Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing is when Alex first came to the Yankees, the first thing he said to me was, what was it like to cover Mike Tyson? Yes. And I said it was pretty much like covering you, only more difficult.
Yeah, but A-Rod, that doesn't surprise me from A-Rod because he's someone that is such a student of everything.
Nah, it's not that I'm trying to say this without using the word. He loves stars, okay?
He's a star blanket.
Yes, that's exactly right. He didn't ask me what it was like to cover like Larry Holmes.
No, he wanted to go right for the Tyson.
Yeah, because that's the guy he thinks that he's comparable to.
Oh, jeez.
I guess, okay. In some way.
But I was thinking about that last night. I don't know why, but I was like, Alex Rodriguez and Mike Tyson, well, he's covered both of them during the heights of their careers.
Very similar. No, actually, they're not similar at all. They're very, very different. But I tell you what. Where they are similar, they took up a lot of my time.
Yes, you've covered them extensively.
I spent way too much time thinking about both of those people.
You covered the Mets and the Yankees extensively this week. I'll start with what's going on with the Mets. They've dropped 5 of 8. It looks like they're looking a little mortal here. The Yankees are looks like their offense is coming on, but first, I think we have to talk about one thing. We have to say who we have coming on the show today.
Oh, we got a big show today. Tom Verducci of the MLB Network and Turner, great baseball broadcaster, and a guy that I worked with at Newsday when he was just a kid. We were both kids. We started together back in 1983, and he'll be a great guest. He's really, and I know that you're going to do the talking on this one.
Yeah.
You and Tommy are tight,
man. Me and Tom are tight. I mean, my days as a researcher intern at MLB Network, those 10 months were glorious together, and Tom Verducci.
He's an encyclopedia. Of baseball. I'll tell you what, I sat next to him, my seat happened to be next to him when the Yankees played the Phillies in the World Series in 2009, and I think I learned more about baseball sitting next to Tom Verducci than I had like in covering it in the previous 15 years, because he points things out. He's really good on pitching. He knows pitching, and I think he'll probably explain a lot of things to you about pitching.
Yeah, we went deep on Harvey, Sonny Gray. We talked about – he said something about Giancarlo Stanton that's going to really surprise you,
okay,
listeners out there.
I'm looking forward to hearing it.
And he's got great hair.
Yes, he does.
I was wondering, why is he not on Twitter? Do you ever talk to him?
Too smart.
He's too smart for 280 characters?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you why. No, because he knows Twitter will only get you in trouble.
Like Darling said.
Exactly. There's really very little good that comes from it. We're also going to hear from Brett Gardner today. I caught up with him yesterday in the Yankee clubhouse. Got to talk to him for about 10 or 15 minutes, so we'll hear what it's like to be the oldest guy in the room.
Interesting, right? I was talking to one of my buddies. I was like, when Gardner came up, he was a guy that he kind of slapped at the ball, and he was the fourth outfielder on that 09 team. And I was like, this guy's – I see a little promise. He's fast. That was the thing. He's speedy.
Yeah, speed is what got him here.
As the years gone on, and now he's the elder statesman on the team, he's shown some power. He's shown some fire. He's an on-base machine. He works counts like no other. And now I've seen that he's kind of a leader in that clubhouse.
He certainly is. But I'll tell you something else. This guy can hit for power. He just doesn't choose to.
Well, he doesn't have to on this team.
Trust me, an on-base guy. But, they play a game. The Yankees play a game, especially in spring training during batting practice. They call it total bases.
Okay.
All right? Everybody takes 5 swings, and the most, if you hit a home run, you get 4 bases. And at the end of each, and it was Jeter's thing. He loved to do it. I was like, all right, guys, total bases. And they would all, so it'd be Jeter, A-Rod, Gardner, whoever else. Gardner used to win it all the time. You would hit 5 home runs.
Wow. That reminds me of like Ishiro. They used to say
Ishiro hit a home run at will.
Ishiro could hit a home run every time he steps up to the plate.
Absolutely. So, well, yeah. In batting practice, anyway.
Yeah, but when they're grooving,
it's a little bit easier.
And that was what it was last night for the Yankees. We're taping this on Tuesday morning, April 24th. But the Yankees are looking good. Their
Speaking
offense.
Of batting practice, did you stick it out?
Yeah, I did.
To see Ryan Lamar throw that fastball to Tyler Austin? Fastball, I should 72 miles an
I was
hour.
Hysterically laughing because after Austin hits the home run off of the position player, the guy had eye black on. He looked like a little leaguer. Because he had the eye black on. He was like, he threw his ball into his mitt all like upset.
No, he was pissed.
His shoulders were slumped. Like, what did you expect was going to happen to a 72 mile an hour fastball?
Thankless task. You know what? I'll tell you one thing. There are a lot of Yankees today who are very thankful they did not strike out.
Yeah, there were no strikeouts.
Because it's happened.
There were a lot of Swisher.
Yes.
Swisher
yes.
struck out.
He never lives it down.
Player. Wow.
I'll tell you what. But what, Aaron Hicks jumped on the first pitch and popped it up.
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah, the catcher dropped it, but, you know, it was a force out. But that's pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
Wait till I see him today.
Yeah, how was your week covering the Yanks and the Mets? What are some takeaways you had?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I was at the Friday game at Yankee Stadium, and then I was at the Gleyber Torres game on Sunday where the real story was Andujar, who's just been fabulous.
I read your article.
That's a 12 extra base hits out of 18.
Machine. Came out of nowhere. I mean, he started off slow, and then now he's just, everything he hits is in the gap.
Ball flies off his bat, you know, and he's a very aggressive hitter. He kind of swings like Gary Sheffield. I mean, he's almost violent.
I saw that tweet last night. He got a Sheffieldian.
Yeah, that was Pete Caldera who did that. But I thought the same thing. I mean, he really swings hard. I don't think he's going to be a big on-base guy, honestly. I don't think he's going to walk a lot. But, man, he's a dangerous hitter, and I think the Yankees found something there. I don't think they expected that from him.
Well, now it's interesting to see, and I know that Brandon Drury will be starting a rehab assignment. I think it was Sunday.
No, Wednesday.
Wednesday, and he's taking some medication. They feel like they've kind of found what the issue was in
it's
terms
kind
of his migraines. But where is this going to go now? Is he going to play third? Is he going to move to first? I mean, you got to figure with Andujar's really hot bat right now, he has to stay in the lineup.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that Boone's going to play the hot guy. There's, you know, but I think Brandon Drury's a great guy to have on your bench, you know, because he can play a couple infield positions. For now, Gleyber is the second baseman. He will be, you know, until proven otherwise, and the Yankees expect that he's going to be there for the rest of the year. But they are going to need somebody at first base because Tyler Austin is going to go down on the suspension pretty soon.
Yeah, five games, at least five.
And, you know, your only alternative right there is Neil Walker, who really hasn't hit at all yet.
Neil has not showed up, so I could see maybe Andujar at first or Drury at first for the time being until Bird comes back. He was walking around the stadium. He seems like he's going to be on the earlier side of 6 to 8 weeks. But also, we want to get to the Metsies, Wally. The Mets are showing a little signs of mortality here, dropping 5 of 8.
It's regression to the mean. You know, I mean, you know, 11-1 wasn't realistic. It wasn't real. It was very good.
I'll talk to some people in Queens.
But it's
not. They
were
shooting for 161-1.
I know what they were shooting for. In fact, I covered the game where they lost the second game of the season, and I wrote, my lead was they weren't going to be 161-1 anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if everybody agreed with that, but yeah, they've lost, what, 4 out of 6 this week, and obviously there's little cracks in the foundation. You know, the biggest crack, obviously, is Matt Harvey, which I don't think anybody's surprised. I can't imagine. I remember last week Ron Darling said 15 starts, but you know, when you're in a tight pennant race, and right now the Mets are only a half a game ahead of Philadelphia.
Listen, you bring that up, I have to issue an apology to who's the manager? Just his name.
Callaway?
No, the Phillies manager. Gabe Kapler.
Yes.
I'm going to issue an apology to Gabe Kapler. I know you tune in to the New York Baseball Podcast. I'm sorry for making fun of you in that first episode when you made 38 pitching changes in 2 weeks.
In
2 days.
It.
But, you know, the Phillies are coming on, man.
Yeah, they are. And so, I mean, can you really afford to go with a guy for 15? So it's half a season.
Oh,
a guy
in terms
who's
of Harvey,
not getting
right.
it done.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what Darling said. He wanted to see 15 out of him. The Mets saw 4, and that was enough.
Yeah, and well, you know what? Here's the thing with Harvey. First of all, Vargas is coming back, so now you have the flexibility. You have the option to move him. Maybe he works things out in the bullpen, but the guy's damaged goods. He really is. You know, and I know there's a lot of people say, well, you know, he parties too much. He's got a bad attitude. He thinks who the hell he is. The problem with this guy is Tommy John surgery and thoracic outlet syndrome. That's it.
Huge, huge injuries.
I mean, yeah, the body does not come back from that. You know, those are two major injuries, which, you know, 10 or 15 years ago would have been career enders. Now, obviously, you know, they get these guys back on the field, but they have to learn a different way to pitch. You know, and we've seen guys do it. Cece Sabathia did it without really being – he had his knee injury, but without an arm injury, but he lost some speed off his fastball. He had to find another way to pitch. Andy Pettit did it.
Do you think it's easier, though, for a lefty to become craftier than a right-hander?
Why?
So feel like they can take more off that slider. They can, you know, interpret learn a curve, which is easier to throw for a lefty or has more deceptive.
I don't think so. I think either way, you know, if you got to be smart, you got to be smart on the mound. You can't just throw hard. We know this.
Yeah.
Right. We know this from Chapman. You know, I saw him throw 103 mile an hour fastball and a rookie hit it out of the
Devers,
ballpark.
Devers, I was in the ballpark for that one.
So I mean, you know, like speed will only get you so far. You got to be smart. You got to keep batters off balance. Harvey hasn't been able to do that. You know, he can't throw as hard as he used to, and he's got to develop his secondary pitches. Otherwise, you know, he's going
to
be done.
There are a few things about this Harvey thing that have me interested. One is how he responds to it. I know that he's, quote-unquote, pissed off. I know I read a few things that saying he wasn't happy with the move. One thing I liked is that Callaway has shown here so far with the Mets is if you don't perform, I'm not going to play you unless your name is Jay Bruce. I don't know what Jay Bruce must have some incriminating photos of Mickey Callaway because he continues to play despite him not performing. But Harvey, they saw he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't giving them any production. And they said, you know what? You're going to go to the bullpen. My second thing here with Harvey is that Dave Eilen, pitching coach, and Mickey Callaway have a track record here of turning around pitchers in the past. Carrasco, Trevor Bauer, Danny Salazar, and Danny Duffy. So, but Eilen said something very interesting. He said, I've done this in the past. I've turned pitches around, but that's if they're willing to learn.
Thank you.
So is he going to be open to this? You know, he's 1 year away from being a free agent. He's a free agent this offseason. Is he going to be willing to learn from a Dave Eilen and a Callaway, embrace this new role that he has, and maybe somehow get his way back into the starting rotation?
Well, this is where his attitude will come in. You know, as I'm saying, I don't think his attitude is the reason why he's struggling this year, but it will be the reason why he doesn't come back, because he's going to have to be open to that. You know, and sometimes guys have a macho complex. And I'm not saying that Harvey does or not. I don't know him well enough to say that. But some guys say, hey, no, you know, man, I'm a power pitcher. I'm not going to do that. And I think Sabathia, for a long time, resisted it. And then realize, hey, you know what, I got to work with my changeup. I got to work with my off-speed stuff because I can't throw the ball past anybody anymore. So, I mean, if Harvey is able to, you know, kind of sublimate that part of his personality that wants to be this alpha dog, you know, and throw the ball past everybody, then he's got a shot.
Well, apparently he's available out of the bullpen starting this week. So we can see Harvey. That's another thing. Are we going to see him? Is he going to come in for one inning and kind of max out? Or is he going to be now the third guy in that bullpen like a Lugo and Gazelman who could be like a Chad Green? We see a multiple inning, you know, wild card.
Here's the thing. If you're trying to convert Matt Harvey from a power pitcher to a pitcher, to a finesse pitcher, maybe the bullpen's not the place to do that, because what's the mindset of a reliever?
You're coming in,
just blast and blow guys away.
You can throw 95.
Right.
You can dial it up if you had to.
So I'm not sure that that's going to help, you know, if the real change that has to be made here is, you know, a whole philosophy of pitching. The other thing I would say is I'm sure they're not going to be bringing him in high leverage situations right away.
No. He's going to come in for mop-up, or he's going to either come in for when they're down maybe 6-1 and pitch the fifth and sixth inning, or I can see him if they're up big, he's going to come in kind of like how Boone did with Betances a little bit early on, but now Betances is now like with all the injuries.
This is even different from that, because this guy's a starting pitcher. He's got to learn now how to get up quickly, get ready to come in, right?
I'm really interested in watching
this. It really is. You know, get up, warm up, maybe sit down again. They want you. They don't want you. See, I don't think they're going to do that with him right away. I think if they get him up, they're bringing him in. And I think it's probably going to be in lower leverage situations. We'll take a look. I think it will be interesting.
But going on with the Mets, dropping the 5-8 and kind of coming back to life a little bit, is I brought up with Jay Bruce, and Callaway looks like he's shown the hot hand, or he's going to play players that are producing. You know, the Mets are still in good standing here as we record this show, 14-6, still in first place, despite the fact that Conforto is slugging around .340. Cespedes is hitting in the low 200s. Yes, he has 18 RBIs, but he has not played to his full potential.
It's because he's not playing enough golf.
That's another thing. We'll get to that later on, what is up with that. I have a lot of theories on that, too. But my thought is that they're not getting the most out of their biggest bats, Conforto, Cespedes, and Bruce, but they're still managing to win games here. So if you want to find something here, that the sky isn't falling in Queens, is that they're still winning games despite their big three.
Yeah, and they're really getting production yet out of Cabrera, who, you know, wasn't expected to be a guy who would carry the lineup.
Yeah.
Right? They're getting some production out of him.
Absolutely.
You know, Rosario's looked okay. Conforto's going to hit. There's no doubt Conforto's going to hit. And I honestly, I don't know if you and I disagree on this, but I have no problem with Callaway showing faith in Jay Bruce because I think he'll come around as well.
Well, he's a pro. I mean, you can see why he has a lot of faith. He's got a great track record. He spent time with them with the Indians last year. But, you know, they brought it up because I saw a lot of fans tweeting and I saw a lot of fans angry. The fact that he was in the game.
They're Met fans. Of course they're angry.
He was in the game in Atlanta late when that ball shot the gap and he's got plantar fasciitis in his foot and it got all the way to the wall. Why isn't Nimmo in there? Why isn't Lagares in center? Why aren't they could have got to the ball quicker. The Mets end up losing that game on a safety squeeze,
right,
out of all things. And that's another thing is the bullpen. We said this for the first 4 weeks on this show, is are the Mets going to win games getting 12 outs from their bullpen? And we're starting to see that bullpen's starting to come down to life,
right,
too.
And you know what? And Callaway knew this. You know, he's been talking about it. The season's only 3 weeks old, but he's been talking about it from the beginning. He kept saying, well, we're okay because the games have been spaced out. We've had rainouts. We've had off days, so the guys haven't had to work that much. But already you're starting to see that the workload is getting to them. And, you know, obviously it helped them tremendously if they had a rainout this weekend and a day off after that. So, you know, the bullpen comes back fresh starting tonight. So we'll see. But, yeah, you can't have four innings of bullpen every night.
Well, now they have Matt Harvey in the bullpen.
Okay. So let's see if that helps.
We got a lot to get to here. We got Brett Gardner in the Yankee clubhouse that you caught up with Tom Verducci. I think we should go to Brett Gardner first.
Let's hear from Brett, man. He's always a good interview, always a great guy to talk to. Brett, it's so different in this clubhouse since it was even last year, I think. I look around, I see all these young guys. Can you believe that at this moment you're the oldest player in point of service on this team?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It definitely is. You know, my time here the last 10 years or so has really flown by looking back on it. But, you know, it's an exciting time to not just be a player here but be a part of the organization, to be a fan. We've got a lot of young kids that are really really, really, really talented, as we started to see last year with some infusion of youth onto the roster. And obviously, Kleber Torres and Andujar, obviously, with the day that he had yesterday, Torres just getting called up. And, you know, like I said, it's an exciting time. And some of these guys are, you know, very, very, very talented.
Have you, seems to me like your role has changed here somewhat over the years. I mean, obviously, I remember from when you were the young kid in the clubhouse. Now you're kind of maybe one of the leaders here. Is that something that just comes about because you've been here so long, or is that something that you consciously decided to take on?
Well, I mean, I guess a little bit of both. I mean, you know, I think, you know, my first few years here, I was in a room with, you know, Hall of Famers to my left and Hall of Famers to my right and across the way and everywhere around, really. And I'm really just, you know, try and keep your mouth shut and keep your ears open and try and learn as much as you can. And now, obviously, you know, you kind of transition into more of a leadership role and try and remember how you were treated as a young kid and try to remember to pass that on to some of these young guys and really, you know, try to help them out and to make them feel comfortable.
You know, you make a great point. When you first walked in here, obviously, you know, Jeter's here, Mariano's here, Posada, you know, all these guys who, you know, either will go on to the Hall of Fame or at least get some consideration. Was that intimidating, or was it something that you looked around and said, geez, I can learn a lot from these guys?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a little intimidating. I mean, you know, my first spring training, I was number 91, and my locker was right between A-Rod and Robbie Cano. I'll never forget. And, you know, I really didn't know what I got myself into. But, you know, it can definitely be intimidating for a younger player, especially for somebody like me who grew up pretty much in the middle of nowhere and coming to New York City is a 180. So, you know, it's definitely one of those things that you have to get used to. And I think, you know, once you realize that everybody in the room has your back and you realize, like you said, how much there is, how much, you know, baseball knowledge is right there at your disposal. Try and pick those guys' brains and learn from them and try and use that to your advantage.
Now, last year, obviously, there were lower expectations on the Yankees than there usually are because there was a lot of changeover, a lot of young guys who hadn't proved themselves yet. You were kind of almost an underdog, which the Yankees never are. This year, I think that the expectations are back in some way because of the fact Aaron Judge hit 52 home runs. You had Giancarlo Stanton who hit 59 home runs. You know, Severino came into his own. Do you feel like there are higher expectations on you this year than there were last year?
Yeah, I definitely think there are. I mean, I definitely think that that's fair to say, and I definitely think that, you know, for us as players, you know, as far as our team, you know, we just have to embrace that. I mean, you know, last year was, like you said, a little different, maybe going into the season than the Yankees and the fan base is accustomed to, but I think this year, you know, with for the reasons that you mentioned, you know, there's a lot to be excited about. And obviously, you know, the Red Sox have gotten off to a great start. They won the AL East last year, and they've obviously got a really good team again this year. And, you know, some other really, really good teams in baseball, the Astros, who knocked us out last year and went on to win the World Series. They probably have a better team at this point this year than they had last year. And, you know, there's just a lot of parity in the game. And, you know, it's as hard as it's ever been, I think, to go out there and compete on a daily basis and to win the division. But, you know, we're up to the challenge, and we're excited about it.
Now, obviously, it's early in the season. Season's a long, long way. A lot of things are going to happen between now and October. But is there already a sense that you guys have to do something here to make sure the Red Sox don't get away with this division?
Well, I mean, you know, I think we need to play a little better, obviously. I mean, I don't think that you can't really worry about what another team's doing, especially when you're not playing them. You can't control that. So, you know, we have to play a little better. We need to pitch a little better. We need to play a little better defense and offensively. We need to score a little more runs. So, you know, I think that I don't think that they can keep up the pace that they've obviously the start that they've gotten out to these first 3 weeks. And hopefully, you know, we pick up our pace a little bit. But it is a long season, and you don't want to look too much into the first couple weeks or first month. You know, we've dealt with a little adversity here early in the season, and you know, we've gotten through it pretty well. And as we all know, we've got a lot of depth to be able to handle some adversity like that. So, you know, I think you know, it's going to be a fun year. And I think that you know, every year, you know, it seems to come down to the last few days or last week of September, and I'm sure this year will be no different. So, you know, like I said, I expect us to play a little better, and, you know, I know that we will.
I got to add, you know, let me first of all tell you that personally, I was surprised that Joe Girardi was let go, especially since you guys came within one game of the World Series. Were you surprised by what happened there?
Yeah, I was. You know, I figured he would be back this year, but, you know, I'm not the one that makes those decisions. And right. Obviously they saw the need to go in a different direction. And, you know, I was surprised by that. But, you know, at the end of the day, not just me, but all my teammates, it's our job to show up here and play, no matter who our manager is or no matter who our leader is. And, you know, I think that, you know, as players, it's important to, you know, it's important to realize that, you know. And, you know, I think that this spring, obviously with almost an entirely new coaching staff and obviously a new manager, I thought this spring training was run really, really well, and almost didn't skip a beat from what I was used to in the past, really. And, you know, this season obviously is, you know, I think the first couple weeks of the season, like I said, I'd like to have maybe for our team to have gotten off to a little better start. But it's a long year. We have to keep things in perspective and, you know, just continue to focus on today and continue to get our work in, which I think we've done. And, you know, so far, the transition has been relatively smooth.
Now, I can tell you from my own personal experience, you know, when there's been a change of editor at a newspaper that I've worked at or something, it's a little bit unsettled. Girardi was the only manager you had known in the major leagues to this point. Was it a little bit, you know, unsettling to you not knowing how the new coaching staff is going to, you know, obviously they know who you are and they know how you play, but I mean, you know, do you have to get to know a new guy like Boone?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, like you said, you don't really know what to expect. And I think every year, years past, I obviously, you know, for the most part, knew exactly what to expect coming down to spring training and when the season started and kind of how things went. So it's been a little bit of a learning experience for me as well. And, you know, obviously, you know, not just, you know, learning how people do things and why they do different things and how they think, but also, you know, establishing those personal relationships of guys that maybe, you know, I had either A, never met before, or B, you know, never really been around too much. So, you know, I think the transition, like I said, has gone really smoothly, not just for me, but for everybody. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're excited about the group of guys that we have in place and the team that we have. And I think it's going to be a good year.
What's the biggest difference between playing for Boone and playing for Girardi?
Wow. You know, I'm not sure, man. Maybe it's a little too early in the season to tell that. I mean, you know, I've been fortunate of, you know, not just my two managers here in the big leagues, but all up and down the minor leagues in my years and the different hitting coaches and everybody that I've had come through these doors. I've been fortunate to, you know, work with a lot of really, really good people and, you know, obviously enjoyed playing for Joe all those years and having fun here these first couple months with Aaron as well. And hopefully, you know, his first season here as the Yankees manager will be a special one.
Have you stayed in touch with Joe?
A little bit. I mean, I know that he's obviously still, you know, involved with the game. And, you know, I always knew that that he would stay involved with the game even long after he was done manager or coaching. He loves the game of baseball. I know he's still involved in the MLB Network a little bit. I know he's still up here in the New York area a little bit. So obviously wish him nothing but the best and miss having him around.
You know, there's probably more changes for you than anybody here. Obviously, you were close with Brian McCann last year, one of your buddies here. He's not here anymore. I mean, who have you really gotten close to of the new guys here?
Wow. A lot of these young guys, man. I mean, obviously, CC and I have been around for forever. But a lot of these young guys, I mean, the outfielders, we kind of stick together. So whether it be Aaron Hicks or Aaron Judge or, you know, some of these young guys you see come up that you just try to put your arm around them a little bit. I mean, when I was a rookie, I remember guys like Johnny Damon really looking out for me and kind of showing me the ropes. And like I said, you just try to remember the way you were treated when you were a young guy and kind of pass that along and continue to give that back to your teammates.
I got to ask you this. The weather's been awful this April. It's been cold as hell. I've been freezing in the press box, and I grew up in New York. You grew up, you're a Southern boy from South Carolina. I see you out there playing most nights with short sleeves. What's the deal? How are you able to deal with this weather?
Well, I really don't like playing with long sleeves on. It's just kind of uncomfortable for me. But I started out the first week or two, I was playing with short sleeves on, and you know, I kind of thought it would warm up eventually, and obviously the last few days it has, but finally it just got to be enough was enough, so I ended up going out there with long sleeves on a few times when I just couldn't.
It was almost like a sign of surrender, man. I didn't expect
to see that. It's one of those things where if I've got no sleeves on or a thin layer of short sleeves, I'm still going to be cold, so.
Do you find that the cold affects the hitters or the pitchers more?
Well, I think it definitely think it affects pitchers from a standpoint of their ability to feel the baseball and maybe spin the baseball and get a good grip on the ball, but it definitely affects hitters as well. I mean, nobody wants to go get jammed or hit one off the end when it's 30 degrees outside. So, and it's obviously just hard generally just to stay loose when it's that cold outside, to be honest. You're out there standing around in the outfield or sitting in the dugout when you're not hitting, and it's hard just to stay warm and stay loose. So, it's something that I feel like this April and the start of the season, we've had a little more cold weather than normal, but it's something that the other team has to deal with as well. And a lot of teams throughout the league have had to deal with. And hopefully we've seen the last of that.
Yeah, I think we have. It's going to be a nice night tonight, so we can wear the short sleeves again.
That sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Brett, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
The elder statesman, Brett Gardner, you heard from him. Thank you, Wally, for tracking him down. I know it's not easy to get these players before they start a game.
I will tell you this, though. Gardner's pretty easy guy to track down. He's usually around. There are guys who you just never, ever see. You know, like
name names.
All right. You never see Stanton. You never see Ellsbury. Of course, Ellsbury's never active. I got to make a confession. I tweeted something yesterday. Who was the idiot who asked that question about Ellsbury?
I was figuring it was you.
It was me. Because it just struck me. People were asking, you know, what's up with Clint Frazier? You know, how's his rehab going? How's, you know, Brandon Drury's rehab going? So I put up my hand and said, you know, Aaron, I feel like an idiot asking this, but what's up with Ellsbury, and is he ever going to play again this year?
How's your relationship so far with Boone?
Good.
You're spending more time with the Yankees.
Good. He's fine. He's, listen, it's still a honeymoon period. You know, we've only played 21, 22 games, whatever it is.
He's only made one really decision.
One decision that backfired.
Right, whereas Callaway, you feel like it just shows the National League versus the American League is where Callaway is making decisions every single night that play an impact. Boone is kind of like sitting back going, wow, this offense is good.
But that's American League managing. The other thing is it also shows you how little real effect the manager has. When he screws up, everybody knows it, right? Because it's usually a bullpen decision or a pinch-hitting decision that he does or doesn't make. But for the most part, a team like the Yankees or even the Mets – you just wind them up and let them go, you know, and the manager's job is to stay out of the way.
One thing I thought was interesting from this Gardner interview was that he was very surprised that they got rid of Girardi. He was expecting Girardi to be back.
Yeah, well, don't forget, that's the only manager he ever played for, and I think they were pretty close. I think he liked him. You know, not everybody in that clubhouse liked Girardi.
I can see them getting along.
But, yeah, I think they got along pretty well because, let's not forget, Gardner's not the most talented player in the world. He's fast and he's durable and, you know, he gets on base, he grinds out his at-bats, but who was like that as a player? Girardi.
Joe Girardi.
Right?
Yeah.
He's not the most talented guy at all. You know, I didn't think he could hit at all. He was a very good defensive catcher. And he's a guy that I think appreciates the less talented guys who really go out there and grind, and that's Brett Gardner.
The thing I love about Gardner is if you go back to his college, he went to the College of Charleston, and he was a walk-on, but he wasn't any old walk-on. He showed up for his first day of tryouts, and the coach said, you know, you're just not good enough. I'm sorry, but you're not going to make this team. Showed up the next day. And was like, listen, I'm going to get on this team. Ended up being the all-time hit leader at Charleston. So that just alludes to your fact that this guy grinds it out.
He's a tough guy. And you know what? He goes by the philosophy I always live by. Do never assume that somebody else is better than you at anything.
He's outlived two eras of Yankee baseball. He was there for the Jeter and A-Rod era, won a World Series in 09. And then he went through kind of that rebuilding years, if you will, the 85 win teams of Vernon Wells.
And he's a guy
Wells
that's perennially on the trading block, right? Every year it's like, all right, they're going to be trading Brett Gardner, and they're not going to re-sign him. I think everybody was surprised when they signed him to that four-year deal just before they got Ellsberg.
It was actually a really good deal if you take a look back. It was $52 million.
It's a great deal.
I mean,
he's underpaid.
He's getting underpaid. Because the guy provides a lot out of the leadoff spot. But I do, before we get to Verducci, I heard the music bumping in the background.
Yeah.
Got me thinking, what's the Yankee clubhouse like for the fans at home that obviously have never stepped foot into that Mall of America that is Yankee Stadium?
It's kind of like it's like the lobby of a hotel you could never afford to stay at. I mean, it's gigantic. It's big. It's kind of oblong. It's everything is done up in like dark paneled wood.
Rich mahogany?
Rich Corinthian leather. They all used to have laptops attached to the front of their lockers. You know, and the funny thing was Derek Jeter always had his tuned like to the Weather Channel because he was always concerned about whether
really?
It was going to rain.
Interesting.
I swear to God. And he would always say to, you know, reporters, what did you hear? Are we going to play tonight or are we not going to play?
That's odd. I never would have thought that.
It was really weird. But Gardner, as befitting a veteran, has like the key. He and CeCe have the two best spots, which are the two lockers, which are directly next to the entrance to the off limits area.
Nice.
So they can just scoot out real quick.
But they are the two guys that are.
Yeah, they don't scoot out.
Right. They want to talk. They should put like Stanton there or
Stanton's
rookie.
Stanton is only just one locker away. It's very easy for him to get out. And then, as you get further away from the inner sanctum, that's where you get like the young kids. You know, like Andujar is as far away as you could get. He's like right at the entrance. Gleyber Torres is there. The middle relievers are there. Like nobody, they kind of like revolve. There's one locker that we joke that whenever they call a guy up, that's the locker he goes in. And the guy that got sent down was in that locker.
The Scranton shuttle locker?
That's exactly right. Like, okay, who's going to be in that locker?
Last night it was David Hale, who just got designated first.
Right. Thank you for your service, David. We'll call you again. And all the starting pitchers are on one side. All the infielders are on another side. And as I say, as befitting your status, as you move up in the pecking order, maybe you'll get an empty locker next to you, like Gardner has an empty locker next to him.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, his locker used to be Carlos Beltran's locker. So now he's got that one.
Cool. When you get on a flight and the seat next to you is open.
Oh, and you hold your breath waiting for them to close the door. Right?
Yeah.
You ever sit like in the aisle and there's somebody in the window and you look at each other and you don't say anything, but you're both thinking the same thing.
It's like,
this guy better not show up, right? And then, like, this 400-pound dude shows up
with
and spills over on both of you.
Yeah, he stinks. He's got BBO, right. Beyond BO. All right, let's get to Tom Verducci. It wasn't just a Yankee interview. We talked a lot of Mets. We got to his thoughts on Matt Harvey, his thoughts on Callaway. We also touched on a lot of Yankee things and a very interesting comment on Giancarlo Stanton. So here's Tom Verducci of MLB Network, and here we go. All right, joining us now on the New York Baseball Podcast, he's an MLB Network analyst, also Sports Illustrated senior writer, and Tom will be in the booth Thursday night for Brewers at Cubs, 8 o'clock on MLB Network. He's the great Tom Verducci. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start off with the Yankees. They're winning some ball games here. Looks like they've turned the corner, at least offensively. You seeing some signs here that the Yankees are breaking out of that early season malaise?
Yeah, most definitely. A lot of it revolves around Giancarlo Stanton. I kind of figured this going into the season. I've seen it happen so many times when guys come to the Yankees, high-profile guys, either trades or free agency, they tend to press, you know, and sometimes it's more than a month, maybe 2 months. It's almost like this break-in period you should almost expect. But I really believe, and I still believe this, the end of the year, I think Stanton's going to hit about 62 home runs. I really do. I just think that ballpark is made for him. The lineup, obviously, is really deep. It's, you know, not like Miami where you could pitch around Stanton and face some other guys. So I think once he gets his feet on the ground, gets comfortable, I think he'll really have a lights-out season for them. So, yeah, we're starting to see that when this lineup is hitting on all cylinders, and we're not quite there yet, I mean, it's going to be scary. You're going to see a lot of football scores this year.
Now, you really think that, Stan can get up to over 60?
I do. The reason I think that is the Yankee Stadium, to me, really makes better hitters out of right-handed hitters. And we talk about that right field porch, and it's obviously inviting for left-handed hitters. But I think you saw this with Sanchez and Judge last year, that it forces right-handed hitters to stay on the pitch a little bit longer, and you can hit a ball out to that short gap in right center field without really squaring it up. And especially when you're as strong as Stanton, I think once he realizes that if I stay on the pitch longer, I can get rewarded for going the other way, even if I don't nail the pitch. And I just think that makes you a better hitter overall when you can use the opposite field for home runs as well. So, you know, I think Sanchez, as I said, and Judge last year started hitting some more home runs to right field, and I think Stanton will pick up on that this year.
Yeah, you saw him last night. He went to right field on a single, which is nice to see, and maybe that's the last thing you want to see as the first thing you want to see as a hitter is a guy go the other way. So that's an interesting theory. I want to talk to you about the young Yankees, Gleyber Torres and Duhar. I mean, the Yankees were adamant in the offseason about not having two rookies in their infield. They went out and got Brandon Drury. They went out and they got Neil Walker. But it's now, what, April 24th when we record this podcast. And look at the Yankees infield. They got two rookies. So let's talk about Andujar first, the guy that's on fire right now. What are your takeaways from the young right-hander?
Yeah, Andujar's got a lot of pop in his bat. I mean, it's just a live bat. You know, he's an extremely aggressive hitter. So I don't think he'll ever be a real high on-base percentage guy, a good on-base percentage, but I think he's going to do damage because there's so much lightning in that bat of his. Yeah, I like just his aggressiveness at the plate. Torres, to me, is more a better all-around hitter. And I like what Aaron Boone said about him, that, you know, he's not the kind of guy, if you see him one day, you're going to go, wow. You know, he's got a certain power skill set or speed. He just seems to do everything really, really well. Very advanced player. So two different type players. But, yeah, you make a good point. For a team that was leery about, you know, giving a lot of playing time to two rookies in the infield, I'm telling you, talent may win out over just flat experience. I mean, ideal world, you want experience. But I'll take talent over experience any day. And these guys are good players right now. They'll just keep getting better over the course of the season.
Yeah, the Yankees had that issue with Brandon Drury and the migraines, and it was like, oh, I guess we'll bring Andujar up, and now it looks like he might keep Drury on the bench. So it's exciting times for the Yanks when it comes to their young infielders here. But the one thing that they've had an issue with early on this year, it's been the starting pitching and a little bit of the bullpen too. Do you think this team has enough starting pitching, or are we going to see Brian Cashman do what he usually does, go out there and acquire a pitcher, maybe even another bullpen piece come July?
The jury's still out. I mean, that question is still out there, and I think it's probably something that will still be there in July because I think they have enough to be a playoff team, because I still think in a worst-case scenario, the Yankees are probably a 90-win team. But as we've seen the last couple of years, man, these good teams want to be great for October, and you see really good teams go out there and step up and make big-time deals in July to get those finishing pieces. And I think the Yankees still will be in that mode. I think a lot of it depends on Sonny Gray. I mean, when you break him down, the individual pitches and the stuff that he has, you would think he's the guy you'd want starting one of the first three games of a playoff series. But when you watch him pitch, it just seems like the way he uses his stuff, the way he nibbles around the plate, it just, the package is not coming together. The sum is actually less than the parts when it comes to Sonny Gray. So you can say, if you're an optimist, you know, you can see reason for him to turn a corner and to really be one of those top three pitchers that you want starting a postseason game. But we haven't seen it yet, you know, going back to last year, even after the trade. So I think he's the swing guy for me. I think Tanaka has been dominant ever since maybe about May or June last year when he stopped throwing his fastballs, become a slider split pitcher predominantly. That's worked to his advantage. So And Severino, to me right now, is as good as anybody in the American League. I mean, he's a prototypical ace in terms of stuff and temperament on the mound. I've just been so impressed by him and his ability to throw strikes time after time. So, yeah, I mean, if it's not Sonny Gray, I think maybe you'll have to see what's out there in the market, whether it's somebody like Cole Hamels. It's way too early to see who might be out there, but I think that question will be there.
Yeah, I was trying to think of going through the teams and what pitcher might be available, and it's so hard to do that nowadays with the, you know, with the second wild card now. So many more teams are in contention later on in the season, but I was thinking maybe a Danny Duffy should the Royals continue to falter. If the Giants actually start to lose some games, they're built to win right now. Maybe a Johnny Cueto or Madison Bumgarner is a name that's you can throw out there too. So one thing we know with Brian Cashman is he'll go out there and get the necessary parts if he sees that the Yankees are in a win-now mode, which they are. Going back to Sonny Gray, I'm trying to figure out why, you know, he's shown such regression with the Yankees. Do you think it has a little bit to do with the AL East? Do you think he's a little spooked in the back of his mind? He doesn't trust his stuff, knowing that he has to pitch to some powerful lineups?
I don't think that's it, because you know, Sonny Gray is a fierce competitor. You know, he's a really good high school quarterback. And, you know, you look at the way he came up as a rookie, and he goes toe-to-toe with Verlander in the postseason. I don't think it's that. I think he's an overthinker. You know, he's a guy who, as I said, he's got a lot of different pitches, and he's always tinkering with how he throws them and when he throws them. I think he really needs to settle in on just a base pitching definition of who he is, because there really is none right now, because he is, you know, so versatile in what he can throw. And the other thing, and I have not been a fan of this in the last few years, is that he's really slowed down his delivery. To me, he's a quick twitch, fast fiber guy, almost like a Lincecum at his best. And over the years, he didn't pitch this way when he first came up, but little by little, he's slowed down the speed of his body and his delivery. Not so much the time in between pitches. He can take forever in that regard, too. But to me, and I know Larry Rothschild tried to quicken him up. I mean, he went back and he looked at his film when, you know, he pitched that great game against Detroit in the playoffs for Oakland. You'd see a much more active, dynamic delivery than what we're seeing now. And again, I just think he thinks so much about every pitch and how he sets up hitters. He needs to get back into attack mode, both in his delivery and selection of pitches. I do think the stuff is there, though. I think, you know, if you're a Yankee fan, you got to hope that something here is going to unlock that Sonny Gray who the Yankees thought they were getting when they made that trade.
Yeah, Yankees need him. They certainly need him. We're talking right now with Tom Verducci, MLB Network analyst, Sports Illustrated senior writer. Check out Tom. He'll be in the booth Thursday night for Brewers at Cubs, 8 o'clock on MLB Network. Let's switch things over to the Mets, another team that's been impressive here in New York. What have you been most impressed with on this team so far as they got off to this pretty good start here?
You know, it might sound corny, but the vibe of this team. You know, I think Mickey Callaway, I thought it was a great hire when they hired him. He's a very optimistic, upbeat kind of guy. And I think with the additions of people like Todd Frazier, bringing back Jay Bruce, it's fun watching this team because you can see the energy that they have. Now, listen, it all begins at their starting pitching. There's no question about that. And I did pick the Mets to be a wild card team this year. I'm just assuming that the starting pitching can't have as many injuries as they've had the last few years. And if you tell me that Syndergaard and DeGrom are going to start, you know, say 55, 60 times, yeah, the Mets are going to win the majority of those games. And that alone almost puts you at least in the wild card hunt. So, yeah, I think, you know, a little bit of overachieving maybe early on offensively. Certainly the way they ran the bases is not something you expected from this team. But, again, I think it gets back to the confidence in which they're playing. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with Callaway and the tone that he set in spring training. And not just tone, by the way, but the way that he worked his pitchers in spring training, the way that Dave Island, the pitching coach, talked about being aggressive. You know, to me, the seeds of this team were set in spring training. And, you know, I know a lot of managers who think, especially when it's your first year, spring training is so important to set a tone. And I thought Callaway and Island pitchers did a great job this year.
No, I agree with you. I think Callaway has definitely changed the culture with the Mets, especially with Dave Island, too. Great hire for the Mets from a pitching standpoint. And one thing we've seen with Callaway so far is if you don't perform, you're not going to be on the field. And that isn't more evident than with Matt Harvey. I mean, it's the big topic here in New York. He's been moved to the bullpen. I want to get your thoughts. Do you agree with the move to the bullpen for Matt Harvey?
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, I got to admit, I was a little bit surprised after four starts. But, you know, clearly it's not just the four starts. It's going back to last year. And, you know, I thought that Matt Harvey, based on the way he threw the ball in spring training, I thought he could be a decent, you know, 3-4 pitcher for the Mets. I thought his changeup came back a little bit. That had been really his best pitch when you go back to 2013. But I never did think his fastball was coming back because of the injuries, because of the mechanics of the way he throws. And I know that Callaway had mentioned this when he talked about putting him in the bullpen now, that when you look at the spin rate and the metrics on his fastball, they just continue to be down. There's just no way around that, you know, Matt Harvey hasn't pitched with that A-plus fastball now for a couple of years. It's not coming back. He has to figure out a way to be effective with a lesser fastball, similar to the way that Tanaka has done, by the way. I'm not saying that Harvey has to go out and invent a split, but he just has to find a plan B, and he's been unable to do that so far. So I guess I'm kind of hedging on, in terms of my surprise. You know, I'm not surprised that they made the change, but I am a little bit surprised that it was only four starts in the season, but obviously a lot of that had to do with Vargas coming off the DL.
Yeah, we had Ron Darling on last week's podcast, and obviously he knows his pitching and knows the Mets roster, and he wanted Harvey to get about 15 starts. He said you can't really estimate a pitcher unless, you know, you get about halfway through what would be a 30-start season. So I also was a little surprised that Callaway pulled the plug on him. And if you open up newspapers today in New York City, you can also see that there are also some rumors about a trade of maybe if he gets his value up, he comes out of the bullpen, has some good outings, they could potentially trade Matt Harvey. Do you really think that the Mets are, like, now done completely with Matt Harvey, or so to say?
No. I mean, I right now, first of all, nobody's really making trades this time of year.
Right.
And right now, I just don't see a fit with anybody on Matt Harvey. I really don't. As you said, maybe it's a case where he goes to the bullpen and he gets his trade value back up. He's not to bring a lot back, but... You know, I know that there was some talk in the Mets front office, even going back to last year, that maybe Matt is better suited to the bullpen. And the reason I say that, and the reason they thought about that was, if you remember, a lot of times in Matt's game, he'd be throwing the ball well, and then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. an inning would go sideways with him, and it would really get out of hand. And there was some thought there that if you just, you know, had him pitch, even if it's two innings, just once through a lineup, and his stuff would play up. It'd be a lot easier for him to get through those jams. You know, maybe that does turn out to be the case. I mean, he certainly didn't get an opportunity to be a multi-inning guy. But, no, I wouldn't say that he's done quite yet. I mean, certainly looking farther down the road at the end of the season, I'm not sure what his future is with the Mets being a free agent, whether there's any room for him after this year. And maybe that's the best thing for Matt Harvey. You know, sometimes you do have to change the scenery to get back on track, but I still think he can contribute to this team, and especially if he can be a multiple inning weapon guy out of the bullpen, you know, to come in there and say the sixth inning and bridge it to your back end relief guys. I still think there's something there, and I think maybe there is a possibility that his stuff does play up in a shorter burst.
Yeah, I mean, they have that now with Seth Lugo and Gesellman. It's become a real weapon for the Mets, so why not add another one too? But you were in the booth with Harold and Joe Buck, Game 5, 2015 World Series, for what now is known as Harvey's last meaningful game. Did you ever think that this would be the end for Matt Harvey? And it's been amazing to see that game right there and what the effects it's had on his career afterwards.
You're right. I mean, it is amazing to think. There's no way I would have thought that at the time. You know, at the time, we're thinking, well, how many times does this team get back to the World Series with these young pitchers, you know, all in the early to mid-20s with just wipeout stuff? And I remember on air having a debate about, you know, which one of these guys would you have? Which one would you like the most if you could only keep one of them between the big four back then? So, it's shocking to me how quickly things sort of unraveled on that. Obviously, a lot of that is health-related, but to me, he looked like one of these guys that was going to compete for Cy Young's multiple times. And, you know, I don't think he's getting back to that level. I think, as I said, he can still be an effective major league pitcher, but if you're talking about a Cy Young candidate, I just don't see the fastball coming back to that kind of level.
Okay, Tom, before we let you go, Cespedes, have you ever heard of a Major League Baseball player saying that maybe golf will help me get out of a slump? Or does he just want to play golf really bad?
You know, I've never heard that before. There's actually some guys who will tell you the complete opposite, right? That it's not good for your baseball swing. But listen, there have been a lot of guys who played a lot of golf over the years. Like going back to Hawk Harrelson, who started out the use of batting gloves by using his golf gloves. He developed blisters back with the old Boston Red Sox. And I know Johnny Bench used to play a lot of golf. You know, it's interesting to me. We hear a lot about pitchers golfing, and I remember Greg Maddux telling me that the manager, Bobby Cox, was happy that these guys were playing golf all the time, because to play golf on the day of a game, you had to get up early. And to get up early, that means you were going to bed early, so they weren't out on the streets or in the bars.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, you know, Cespedes, listen, he's his own cat. I think we all know that. I was surprised when he gave up golf, because we all know how much he absolutely loves that sport. So, to me, I don't have a problem with him playing golf. I think if that relaxes the mind, puts you in a good frame of mind, you know, go out there and knock yourself out on the links. But to answer your question, I've never heard anybody say it improves my baseball swing, no.
Wow. All right. Tom Verducci, thank you very much for coming on the New York Baseball Podcast. We'll have to get Wally back in here so he can you guys can reminisce about your Newsday days.
There you go. That sounds like fun. Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so good interview, man. Tom Verducci, as I said, an encyclopedia of baseball. I mean, the guy knows everything that's going on. He's very articulate, and as I said, I've worked with him for a long, long time. But the one thing that really perked up my ears was he thinks Stanton's going to hit 62 home runs.
We have to isolate that and make that like a meme now. Because when he said it, I went like this. I'm like, what? That's not exactly good radio. I went like, what? 62 home runs.
No, it is good radio. It's the truth, man. I thought the same thing. It's like, wow, really? I mean, boy, he's got five now, right?
Yeah, so he's going to have to hit, if my math is correct, he's going to have
57.
To hit 57 more home runs. I mean, wow. I mean, his explanation, though, was made sense. I mean, because of the right field being so close and him being able to not get a couple cheap home runs to right field, and the offense hasn't exactly clicked yet.
I mean, he doesn't hit that many cheap home runs, but you know the truth is, a lot of his most of his power is to right center anyway. He hits a lot of shots there, so maybe I just never heard anybody make the case that Yankee Stadium is good for a right-handed hitter, because it never has been.
It was interesting.
From 1923, it hasn't been.
It was interesting because it said it makes you want to go to right field more, and everything you know about hitting is when you go the other way. You are a full, you're complete hitter. You can always pull the ball, but the best hitters learn how to go the opposite way.
Yeah, well, he didn't go the opposite way Monday night.
Oh,
he
my God.
A bomb, a moonshot
that
to,
thing was,
to left
that
field.
Thing was hung up there for a long time.
You know, I must say, you know, we're taping this on a Tuesday morning, and we're talking about Monday night's game. That was the Yankee game that I think they all envisioned when they put this team together.
Yep.
You know, we haven't really seen it yet. You know, 14 runs and home runs not only from Stanton, who you expect them from, but from Andujar, who didn't even make the roster until, McKinney got hurt. And then grand slam by Didi Gregorius, who right now is one of the hottest hitters in the game.
Oh, Didi. Didi Gregorius making us euphorious.
Yes, and Didi. But, I mean, really, this guy, the first month he was here, people were scratching their heads like, is the guy that's going to replace Jeter?
I remember him making a bunch of outs on the base paths.
Oh, yeah.
And him just being horrible. And now
I mean,
I don't think anyone.
He was a deer in the headlights.
I don't think anyone saw this coming from Didi Gregorius. He continues to be a solid force in the middle of that lineup. So I kind of understand what Verducci was talking about with maybe Stanton, 62 home runs. And he just wasn't just like, I think he's going to hit 60. He was like, boom,
you know,
62.
Here's what we got to do. Let's go through. How many did Giancarlo Stanton have at this point last year?
That's a good question.
Right? I mean, it's an easy thing to find out, and I can do it with a real quick web search. But there were a couple of other things that Verducci said that I thought were interesting. He talked about Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
You know, and he thinks that Sonny's going to find himself. Honestly, I'm wondering if the guy's hurt. I really am. And I asked Boone this question last week, and he kind of brushed it off like I was out of my mind. But it was Boone who brought up the fact that this guy is only throwing 91 miles an hour.
His velocity's down, and we saw that with Tommy Canley. His velocity was down, and now he's got, you know, tendonitis in his shoulder and all those
types
of issues.
I mean, that's always a red flag. Always a red flag.
Yeah.
So, and I'm looking up, as we talk, I'm looking up the Stanton things, but I just wonder if he's completely healthy. He had seven home runs last April.
So he's only two
he's
off.
Behind. He's slightly behind that.
Well, it's because he hit 18 in August.
Yeah, that really does help.
So if he needs one of those months where he hits 15 to you know,
he might be a better
20.
Warm weather hitter, as a lot of guys are. July and August, he hit 30 home runs.
Yeah, because he, you know, living in Miami.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, nobody likes, and Gardner even mentioned it in the interview, nobody likes hitting in the cold weather. You know, it hurts your hands.
If for Gardner to say it, it made me believe it, because you brought up the sleeves. I'm happy you brought
up the sleeves. And
you know
what? He went short sleeve last night, and damn, it was cold.
Yeah.
He thought it was going to be warm out, and it wasn't. But, yeah, I think Sonny Gray is kind of a puzzle. The difference between the Yankees and the Mets is the Yankees don't have Jason Vargas coming back, you know, to step into the rotation.
The Mets have depth.
Yeah, so basically, you know, the Yankees are going to have to, and Boone has been saying this every day, you know, we have to find a way out of this for Sonny. We really have no other option at this point.
I mean, one thing about Sonny Gray here is what I'm noticing, he's now 4-8 as a Yankee with an ERA around 8. And we praise Brian Cashman, rightfully so, for some of the great moves he's made on his 20 years as the Yankees GM, getting this team to, you know, whatever, 4 World Championships, rebuilding to now having one of the youngest teams in baseball after having the oldest team in baseball just a couple of years ago. But if you want to find one thing you can nitpick with Brian Cashman or his Achilles heel, it's assessing starting pitching. You go down the list, you know, for every acquiring of Roger Clemens and David Wells and the great signing of Mike Mussina, you have a Kiyagawa in there.
Right.
You have a Carl Pavano, you have a Jared Wright, and you have an Esteban Loaiza. And now is Sonny Gray going to...
Left out Jaime Garcia.
Jaime pitched
not
bad.
One of my favorites.
He pitched not bad against
Yankee. He pitched okay the other night. Yeah, but
what I'm saying...
He did not pitch well as a Yankee.
What I'm saying is... Is Sonny Gray going to be on this list? Did Billy Beane know something that we didn't know? They have an old adage that no one knows your players more than your own team. So did they know that Sonny Gray, maybe he wasn't the pitcher that he was early on when he was battling Verlander in the playoffs?
Let's not forget, in 2016, he missed time with a trapezius strain, and he also missed time, I think, with an elbow problem or a forearm problem.
Right, that was the MO on him, was that he was injury-prone.
Yes, so of course, I mean... You know, and the Yankees got him at the time. It appeared that they got him rather cheaply, you know. So, and that was one of the first things I thought. And when I first met Sonny, I might have put him off a little bit, but I said, you know, are you healthy? I said, you know, a pitcher as good as you, you know, why would Oakland get rid of you? And he said, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Everything, you know, all that stuff is in the past. But here we go, 91 miles an hour on his fastball. Maybe he's not.
Yeah, no, Yankee fans are going to be upset if they see James Caprillion. Who is nowhere near back
yet. But he was
yet.
Damaged goods as well.
He's got a Tommy John.
Yes.
But he's throwing his... I've read some of his tweets. He's got his first rehab start coming up. But if he, in a year from now, ends up being what we all thought he was going to be, a true, you know, 95-mile-an-hour guy, a top-of-the-rotation talent.
He looked good in his first spring training, I must tell you that. But the Sonny Gray move was clearly a move for, like, right now.
Of course.
You know,
I mean, Caprillion, they also gave up two guys.
I don't think there's any doubt Caprillion's going to, you know, in 3 years from now, we're going to say, oh, geez, you know, why did we give up Caprillion for this guy? But he was for, you know, the push last year.
Yeah.
He was you know, we're in this now. We need a pitcher. Let's do this.
And you look at some of the other names that were being thrown around for the Yankees to acquire. One of them, Garrett Cole, who has a sub-1 ERA right now,
who
is striking everyone
Yankee,
out.
Who was Yankee property for a short time.
Yeah, they drafted him, and then he decided to go back to college. But Garrett Cole is lights out. Patrick Corbin, do you remember that name?
Yes, I do.
The Yankees were throwing that around. He is leading the National League in ERA, and he almost pitched a no-hitter. So the Yankees made an interesting move with getting Stanton. I wasn't exactly on board for the acquisition of Stanton, because I thought
they
had other
62 home runs. You will be.
if Tom Verducci's plan comes to play, I'll be eating my words once again. But I thought the Yankees should have addressed so many other things. Mostly, one of them would be the catching and getting Gary Sanchez out from behind the plate.
Oh boy, opens up a can of worms.
Your boy Alan Cockrell, former Yankees hitting coach, had something to say about that he wasn't the most fiery guy, or he lacked energy in his time.
low energy, low like energy. Jeb Bush. You know what? One thing about Alan Cockrell, he seemed like a nice guy, but he never, never talked to the media when he was the Yankees hitting coach. So I was kind of surprised to see that, you know, he would say such a thing. But now he's out of a job, basically. You know, he's not working anywhere.
He was the Yankees hitting. He was the hitting coach, and Timms was the assistant. And now,
yeah,
Timms
well, he
is
was
now the
first.
Coach.
He was the assistant to the late lamented Jeff Pentland. Do you remember him?
Oh wow, the Yankees former, went through a lot of batting coaches.
Weird hitting coaches. The guy was a former pitcher who became a batting coach. I don't think the players liked him all that much. He lasted 1 year, and then they elevated Cockrell to the full time coach. And you know, Timms was his assistant. Now Timms is the full time coach. I mean, look, I heard a lot of criticisms of Gary Sanchez last year. I wrote some of them. Most of them had to do with his concentration, and it was not unlike what Cockrell said, that he does think about his hitting, that a lot of times he puts down the fingers and then forgets what he called, which was why, you know, first of all, there were so many mound visits, and B, why there were so many pass balls.
Yeah, look at this year. So many cross-ups, so many pass balls.
Yeah, and he supposedly has improved since then, but clearly, you know, as a defense, he's got a great arm, but as a defensive catcher, he's pretty lacking. Remember the tag he missed at home plate in the playoff game? I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that he can improve upon, but they love his bat, you know?
Yeah.
The problem is, as always, the Yankees have a bunch of guys who probably are better off as DHs, including Stanton.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't in love with the Stanton move, because I thought they should have went into this offseason addressing catching, getting a better defensive catcher, having Stanton catch 60 to 70 games and DH. But that all went out the window when they got Stanton. But I was thinking about Sanchez, and when I read these remarks from Cockrell and saying that he only cares about his offense, I mean, think about the catching position, what it's been predominantly in baseball for the last however many years. It's usually a guy like a Joe Girardi type that isn't, you know, skilled offensively, but can call a good game, can block the ball in the dirt, can receive the ball. And you got a guy in Gary Sanchez who is now reincarnated as Manny Ramirez, is a great offensive player who is a offense first, then defense second. So, of course, he's going to think about that. We just have to live with the fact that this guy is going
to
hit 35 to 40 homers.
Yeah, well, but that's what you get paid for, too. Nobody gets paid for not giving up pass balls. You know, when they sit down at the arbitration table, the agent doesn't say, yeah, there were no pass balls. You know, it doesn't get you anything. Yeah. What gets you something is, you know, we hit 40 homers.
Yeah.
You know, I knocked in 120 runs. That's the way you get paid. And quite honestly, these days, you know, the catcher is expected to contribute to the offense.
Yeah, if there are some holes with this Yankee team, the offense is coming along. They're scoring, what, 6 runs a game? It's the defense. Has been shoddy. That's why they have Torres at second to kind of shore it up. And Duhar is improving. But when Burt comes back, maybe he'll be a little bit better there.
Well, how are you taking Tyler Austin out at the moment?
I'm not really high on Tyler Austin.
Well, when a guy's throwing 72 miles an hour, he's a killer.
Yeah, he's good when it comes to that, but I think Tyler's kind of like a one-dimensional. He's a perfect backup first base, but I don't think he's the main guy. But, you know.
He's got a good swing for Yankee Stadium, though.
Nice right-handed swing, as Tom Verducci pointed out.
Yes, and the other thing about, Tyler Austin, the Yankees have always been high on him. It's kind of, for a while, it was a toss-up between Bird and Austin. I think now they think Bird is the better player. The problem is they can't keep him on the field.
Yeah, well, Austin's been great in when it comes to him being dependable, healthy, and filling in when he has to. And it seems like he's getting big hits, and he's punching Red Sox, which I know a lot of Yankee fans love, and he's putting them in headlocks.
I didn't see a single clean punch in that fight. I'm sorry.
Oh, listen, I do the CompuBox.
I know you do.
I went back.
Did you see a clean punch?
No, I tweeted it.
Okay.
I said, no. Once again, no clean punches landed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a baseball fight, you know, please.
What did you think of Verducci's thoughts on Harvey?
I was surprised that he's surprised, quite honestly, because of what I said before. I mean, you really want to go half a season with a guy that, you know, is just not getting it done, who's basically costing you a game every time he goes out there. But I do agree with him that he's got to reinvent himself. And I said it, you know, he's got to become a finesse pitcher, because, you know, 95 down the middle is not going to do it. It's not going to get it done. It's just not fast enough anymore. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, it's his mindset. If he's willing to say, okay, I'm not what I was, now I have to kind of like fool guys. And again, it goes back to the whole macho complex. You know, am I a knockout puncher or am I a boxer? Who am I? Am I Tyson or am I, you know, Howard Davis Jr. for your boxing fans out there? I'm right. I mean, a guy that's just going to be slick and slap you to death and win a decision, or am I going to blow you away? I think Harvey identifies himself as the guy who comes in and blows you away.
I'll tell you what, it's going to be really interesting to watch the Mets, see how they respond to a little bit of a losing streak, or I wouldn't even call it a losing streak, but coming back down to life. Harvey coming out of the bullpen, Wheeler back in there. We're going to see a little bit of Vargas. Will the offense start to hit the big three? Are they going to start to come around, or is it going to be Asdrubal Cabrera carrying this team?
No.
So it's interesting to watch what's going on in Queens. They have six games on the road coming up this week. They got at Cardinals. They can get fat a little bit on the Padres because they are not playing good baseball, and then they're home again against the surprising Braves. So, you know, a lot to be desired here with the Metsies.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they come back from this, because it is kind of a losing streak, especially, you know, when you're 14, you're 11-1, and then your next 8 games you're 3-5.
Yeah.
it's kind of a change of fortune. So let's see how they react to that. Let's see how Callaway reacts to it. I know that you're very high on, you know, the effect the manager has on
Magic Mickey.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, but let's see how he, you know, I want to see his demeanor in the post-game press conferences when they lose, you know, when he's criticized. This is when you find out, you know, everybody is a great guy when they're winning.
Yeah, we're getting into the meat of early on in the season. We're seeing more and more storylines develop with the Yankees. They're in the middle of 18 games and 18 days stretch. They're going to get take care of the Twins like they seem to always do, and then they got three on the road with the Angels. Ohtani will not be pitching against the Yanks.
No, unfortunately.
I wanted to see that. He'll be hitting against the Yankees, though.
That's great. I mean, you know, it would just amaze me if this guy, this Japanese player, and Japanese players were maligned for so many years, you know, especially since, you know, we didn't see a lot of Japanese pitchers here before Arabu. If this guy like turns out to be like the next Babe Ruth, it would just be amazing.
And he'd spurn the Yankees, did not want to go there.
Well, he wanted to stay on the West Coast.
It made sense. I understand why he wanted to do it. But three with the Angels, and they go to the Astros, and then they go to the Indians, and they're home against the Indians, and then they got a three-game set with the Red Sox. So the Yankees are in the middle of a really tough stretch here. Red Sox, who are, you know, before they got no hit, which baseball is the coolest sport because you can go 17-2 and then get no hit the next day. They're playing the Rays, the Royals, and the Rangers. So this is an important time for the Yankees.
I understand that. On paper, it looks like, you know, the Red Sox have kind of an easy path here. But we'll see. You don't know. That no-hitter, they all went to a hockey game the next day to kind of, like, recover from it.
The Red Sox?
Yeah.
Oh,
they went to see the Bruins.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because they were in Toronto.
Yeah, yeah.
They must have been. Yeah, so they were playing up there. Yeah, so that's where he took them out to go. Alex Cora took them to a game.
Team bonding.
Yeah, team bonding.
Not a two-game losing streak.
But listen, you want good news for the Yankees? Injured guys are coming back. So when you have a stretch of games like that with no days off, you want depth. Brandon Drury comes back. You can give Andujar a day off. You can give Gleyber Torres a day off. You can give Didi a day off. The guy never takes a day off.
Right. You can get Torres at short, or you can move around some guys. But big things going on. The Yankees and Mets. What to watch for tonight, Wally? This is Tuesday night. Derek Jeter is on Real Sports with your boy Brian Gumbel. Contentious interview.
Contentious. Nothing's contentious with Derek because he deflects everything.
Yeah, one clip I did see before we wrap up, he said to Brian Gumbel, you have a weak mind. You're a weak-minded dude.
Well,
and Brian Gumbel goes,
Well, then he proved it. He proved his point.
He didn't say, I was making fun of Gumbel's voice.
What did Gumbel say?
He was like, no. He's like, but you're losing games, Derek. You're clearly not trying to win games with this roster.
Meant was that even the thought of, you know, not trying to win every game was a sign of weak-mindedness.
Yeah, well, it made headlines.
Yeah, I understand that, you know. Derek, that's pretty good. I wish he had said things like that in the clubhouse.
Yeah, well, he's too busy worrying about the weather and the Doppler radar.
Yes, that's right. When are we going to play tonight?
So Derek Jeter continues to get dragged in the media. And while Alex Rodriguez, we are contractually obligated to mention Alex Rodriguez's name once per podcast. Well, Alex Rodriguez is America's new hero.
Yeah, well, is he your hero?
Oh, always be my hero.
Where is he today? Where has he been?
Let me pull it up Instagram before we go.
Like with Oprah or something?
Where is A-Rod? Where in the world is Alex Rodriguez? I should have him in the top of my search because I'm always checking up. Oh, we got a fresh Instagram story.
Oh, boy.
He's in Soho, New York.
Nice. Maybe he'll come to Yankee Stadium tonight.
Soho, he's looking at a giant apartment with J-Lo.
Wow. Yeah,
look at this apartment.
They need a lot of space.
This apartment is so big that J-Lo looks tiny.
They need a lot of space for their egos.
Amongst other body parts.
Wouldn't know about that.
Jennifer Lopez. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to say goodbye. We'll see you next week. More big guests, more analysis. Yankees and Mets here are starting to heat up as the weather gets warmer. New York Baseball Podcast. We'll see you next week.